9. Jimmy sat in his private jail cell, which sadly was the nicest home he'd had in 30 years. It was clean, the toilet worked, and he didn't have to pedal it. Of course, he couldn't leave, but he was sure that would change soon. Jimmy had expected to be taken into custody once he revealed himself to the authorities, but once he was officially working with them, he expected his treatment would improve. Jimmy heard the agents coming long before he saw them. He heard the jangling of keys on the far side of the steel security door at the far end of the hall, which told him that someone was approaching. Then Jimmy heard the security door open and the sound of footsteps, which told him that the visitors were two men. Then Jimmy heard the other prisoners greeting the visitors with a mixture of insults, threats, and insulting threats, which told Jimmy that the visitors were not the normal jail guards. Finally, Jimmy heard one of the visitors silence the prisoners by shouting a torrent of the most viscerally horrifying threats Jimmy had ever heard, while the other man said nothing, which told him that the visitors were Agents Miller and Murphy. Jimmy sat up on his bed and turned to face the iron bars. The electronic lock on his door and the doors of the two adjacent cells had mysteriously stopped working, so they were secured with several loops of thick chain and big, beefy padlocks that Jimmy could have picked quite quickly if he'd had any wish to do so. Agents Miller and Murphy arrived in front of Jimmy's cell. Jimmy waited patiently while Agent Miller finished a particularly long and intricate threat, shouted not at any specific prisoner, but at anybody who had the audacity to be listening at that moment. When he was finished, Jimmy said, "Good morning, gentlemen." Agent Murphy's face split into a wide, goofy grin.
"Why, good morning, Jimmy. I hope you slept well. We're awfully sorry about your accommodations. We're still working on getting you someplace a little more comfortable."
This was not unexpected. Miller and Murphy employed an exaggerated version of the old good cop, bad cop routine that Jimmy liked to call violently unstable, rageaholic cop, friendly, talkative, youth pastor cop. As soon as it became clear that Jimmy was not a perpetrator to be bullied, but an ally to be placated, Agent Murphy had taken over most communication. Jimmy said,
"I slept very well, thank you. I'd rather not be in a jail cell if I don't have to, but I know you're working on that. How was your evening? I trust the agency has found you some place to stay."
Agent Miller remained silent and white-knuckled, just staring at Jimmy and looking as if he were chewing on his own tongue. Agent Murphy chuckled lightly and said,
"They've put us up at a charmingly rustic independent motel near the airport."
"Oh,"
Jimmy said,
"that doesn't sound very convenient."
"Oh, the airport's not far from downtown. It's just a little over an hour commute each way, thanks to this amazing Seattle traffic. The hotel's not much, but it's all we need. There's 10 channels worth of cable on the TV and clean sheets on our twin beds and a picturesque view of the gentlemen's club next door."
Jimmy thought he saw Agent Miller's left eye twitch. Jimmy said,
"I'm sure that's very entertaining."
Miller couldn't take any more.
"It might be," he said, "if we had a view of the inside, but all we can see is a parking lot full of desperate, lonely men, all of whom seem to look in our window. They seem to be fascinated by the sight of two middle-aged men lying in twin beds like Ernie and Bert, watching the Weather Channel because it's the most exciting thing on. It's like being an exhibit in an alien zoo on the planet of the scabby pervs."
Agent Murphy turned to look at his partner, and Agent Miller immediately stopped talking, clenching his jaw so hard that his teeth nearly cracked.
"Now, Miller, you know that the nice man at the front desk promised to get our blinds fixed so we could close them just as soon as he gets around to it."
The agents turned their attention back to Jimmy, one viewing him with an air of friendly benevolence, the other with cold loathing. Jimmy said,
"Look, guys, I'm sorry. I wish we could go back to your home office in L.A., but you know I can't fly. You saw what being next to me did to your phone. You really want to ride in the plane with me?"
"We could drive it," Miller growled. "It can be done in 18 hours if you're motivated."
Jimmy had no doubt that Agent Miller was motivated.
You'd have to get a car with no integrated circuitry, so that means an unrestored car from the 50s. Then you'd have to take roads where traffic would never get closer than 30 feet from us for more than, say, 5 seconds at a time. So that would mean taking little roads through eastern Washington, Idaho, and Nevada to get there.
You seem to have given this a lot of thought,
Agent Murphy said.
That route is how I got to Seattle,
Jimmy said.
On your bicycle?
Yep.
The agents looked at each other, then looked at Jimmy. He was in his 60s and very thin, but neither man doubted for an instant that he was telling the truth.
If you must get me to L.A., the fastest way would be to get the Treasury Department to hire a boxcar on the longest freight train you can find going to California. It's faster than driving the long way, and it'll keep me away from any electronics I might damage.
How much would that cost?
Agent Murphy asked.
Sadly, a lot more than your hotel room for a week.
Agent Miller grunted.
A week?
Jimmy thought he could hear tendons popping in the agent's hands. Jimmy put his hands up defensively.
Maybe less. Hey, hopefully less.
Agent Miller muttered.
It better be less.
Jimmy smiled and said,
It will be. It will.
Good.
Probably.